Welcome tonight to the Yes, Tearing Down the Walls. Tonight we have Hadil and Margaret, who are both involved with the Yes exchange student. And our program is Yes tonight because we say no a lot to teens. Know this, know that. But this is a program that says yes. Yes locally, yes a program from our country, from the State Department, and yes as world citizens. So we'd like to start with Hadil introducing herself and telling a little bit about who she is and how she happened to come here.
Okay. Hi, I'm Hadil Belou from Palestine, and I came here in December. I'm here with the YES program, Youth Study and Exchange program, and it's the first year for this program in the Middle East, and we are here for high school, to study in high school for 1 year, but I had some problems with my visa, so I didn't come here until December, but it has been a very, very nice and great experience for me. And my family here, my host family, are very happy for that also. And my real family also in Palestine, they think that I had so much to give and take from being here as an exchange student. So,
Bobby, could we take a moment and just show her family and Ramallah? How many are in your family?
I have two brothers and my mother and my father.
Okay. And then do you want to show your host family also?
Yeah, and I my host family, Hossam Attal and Tamara Miller, right? They have three kids, two daughters and one son.
And they live here in Ada area, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Attal Miller family was the first family that I had interviewed. I'm a new volunteer representative with the ASSE International Program. I volunteered because I was real concerned. I've known Muslim people all my life, Arab people all my life, and the image in the papers is so negative. You hear Arab and you people are follow it closely with terrorist or something like that. And you hear Muslim and it's always fundamentalist. And the people I knew were kind. We just had really good relations. So I was happy when they asked if I would help out with the program. I was happy to do it. And the first family that I interviewed was the Attal Miller family, the family that Hadil is staying with. And they turned out to be perfect. I thought, what a terrific family. We went through some applications. When the kids join the program, they fill out about a 24-page application. Yeah. They're tested for English, their ability to read it, to speak it, to understand it. They go through an interview with a panel of three, usually an educator, somebody from a cultural exchange nonprofit agency, somebody from the State Department, and usually one of those people is has some sort of training as a psychologist. So they're looking at the whole student, trying to figure out, are they somebody who's going to be able to handle time in the United States academically, and are they going to be flexible enough to be able to handle the cultural differences? Hadil, of course, has been great. It's been a good year for her and most of the other kids, too. I have a young man living with me from Palestine, from Gaza.
24 pages would have done me in. How did you happen to pick up that paper and join this group?
The Emirates is the organization that works on that program in the Middle East.
Okay.
And they gave the applications for some schools, and one of the schools was mine. And they gave the students with high academic scores in the school, mm-hmm. and I was one of them. Mm-hmm. And I had just 1 day to fill the whole application. And we had to go to doctors and to all that stuff and take photos. So I was racing to fill it, but I did it, and I just applied, and I wasn't sure that I'm going to get it, or uh-huh. I said maybe 1% that I'm going to get it, because it's really good good chance for me, and many people will fill it, so the competition will be really hard. But and my mom said she encouraged me at first, but after I got it, she told me, I'll let you apply for that because I didn't think that you're going to get it. But now she's happy for that.
That was a question in our minds. We said, given everything that's going on in the world, especially with sending a girl from a Muslim culture to the United States, must have been somewhat terrifying for your families. And as a matter of fact, it was terrifying for one family, but not in the way that we'd expected. Tamara and her husband had looked at a number of applications, and the first girl they selected wanted to be a journalist, and we were looking at placing this child in a high school, and the school was looking at them and said, well, these are all good and all that. We called up the girl, and her father was in prison. And I was so shocked because I said, my goodness, how did a girl whose father's in prison get to be a part of the program? And wrote to the agency that works over there, and they said, oh, well, house arrest is pretty common over there. You'll be lucky to find somebody who hasn't been arrested in the family. Totally shocked. So
that was awareness piece for you.
Very much. The whole thing has been a travel down a different road, I'll tell you. It's one of those we aren't in Kansas anymore roads, though. And
so how did you deal with that? I mean, that was...
Well, actually, the host family called her father, and he was in prison but actually had access to a phone and talked to them, and she ended up declining even attempting to come to the United States because her mother would have been left alone in their house, and she was afraid that somehow her mother would be forced out and they would lose the property forever. So she stayed instead, passed up the scholarship, and of course Hadil wanted to be a doctor, wants to be a doctor, and Dr. Atal would be the perfect mentor. It'd be a great environment. She's a bright student, you know. And no, so we said, well, then let's see what we can do with this.
So the placing of students really takes a lot of time from the beginning of filling out, plus all the doctors thing. I'm amazed in one day. I still wonder how you knew this was right for you. I mean, running around, how motivated in one day to get the application, to fill out 24 pages, to go to doctors, to convince your mother. I mean, that's a pretty full day.
I know. It was a very busy day for me. I don't know, I was very excited for it. The idea was very good for me.
She wrote good essays. They really captured who she is, her positive spirit, her, you know, just graciousness, her enjoyment of life. She's a very optimistic person, and it all came through. And we were very, very pleased, you know, because you're not quite sure. Daddy's filled out totally without anybody coaching them or monitoring them, you know. There were a couple hundred kids that filled them out, and only eight were selected. And out of those, I think most of the eight, seven maybe, six or seven were able to come.
So we, competitive.
We did then write to Hadil, and after 2 weeks, I hadn't gotten any response, not a phone call, not an email, and I started wondering what's happening. So of course, I called the organization. Why haven't I heard from Adele? Has she changed her mind? And they said, well, it's only been 2 weeks. Her letters have to be opened. They go through them line by line. They check all the mail. It might take her a month before she can get back. And I'm going, what? So then we started getting, when are these kids going to come? By that time, I had a young man from Gaza, from the northern part, very difficult area to be from. I had no idea how difficult. His family fell through, and I said, bring him anyway. I can't see leaving anybody. Just what little I knew, I can't see leaving anybody behind. We'll find a family for him. So we started the end of July getting these little emails. And the emails would go something like, did they get through the checkpoint? I'm going, checkpoint? What checkpoint? What checkpoint? So, of course, I had to go out and buy maps and do that sort of thing. And by golly, if there aren't little roadblocks and obstacles and things like that and military stations and people have to queue up, they have to line up, stand for a couple of hours in the sun with a little passport in their own country, to be allowed one by one to get through these checkpoints. And it turns out in little tiny Gaza, which is no longer than 18 miles long, something like that, there are 3 to 5 checkpoints, and you have to wait 2 to 4 to, now it's over 10 hours sometimes, mm-hmm. to get through and go just a couple of miles. So I was pretty shocked. Well, no, he didn't get through the checkpoint today, maybe tomorrow. I'm going, this is, you know, to me it was bizarre. I thought, this is a democracy over there, right? No, it's not. But anyway, it was interesting. Now, where did you wait? You were all waiting at that point for people to gather, to get your visas.
Oh, I waited too long. I waited 6 months.
Yes.
First, I went to Jordan.
Yes.
And I waited there for 1 month. Then my mother told me to go back and start school. And if I got my visa, I'll go. But if I didn't, I didn't. And I'll stay and go on.
And I have to say, it was your persistence in emailing every day. Hadil ended up emailing everybody from President Bush to Laura Bush to the senators, and her host mom, Tamara, also did the same. And I called the State Department regularly, emailed people. I was told not to, but, you know, hey, this is America. They got so sick of us. They still talk about it.
So in order for you to get a visa, you had to go to another country and wait for a month?
No, actually. I went to Jerusalem, to the embassy in Jerusalem, and then I did an interview.
Okay.
They did a regular interview with me. They just asked me my name, why I'm going there, and I answered.
Uh-huh.
And nothing went wrong.
Uh-huh.
And everybody in the program got their visas after 1 week, I guess, or two. This is
it took a couple weeks for most of them, yeah.
And some they took just 1 week or less. And I was sure that I'm going to get it because nobody had a problem, so why would I? Mm-hmm. And then I waited and waited and waited and tried everything that I could and never lost hope. And I felt something that
forever,
I'm going
here. You asked about the airport. Gaza has no airport. They used to have an airport, but they have no airport, they have no seaport, they have no port, they have no roads, they have no nothing. Yeah. So you have to just go down one little main road, which is no longer open anymore. I guess they blew up a couple miles of it, something like that. I don't know how they get it. Somebody said they took a donkey cart around on the seashore recently. But anyway, it's difficult to get through there, and Thayer, the boy with me, went to Egypt first and then had to fly to Jordan. You had to leave from Jordan as well.
Yeah, we went from Ramallah to Jordan, and then we waited there. And all the Palestinian students, they couldn't go with the Middle East, the other students.
They were supposed to leave August 1st. And August 1st, Britain closed its doors, so there were no more transit visas for Palestinians because so many people that get transit visas take the first exit and don't go back, I guess, something like that. Yeah. You know, it's not a pleasant place to be. And so they closed their doors, and the kids could not even fly over England. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had to do a direct flight. And, of course, at that time, the tickets had already been bought because people weren't aware that was change was coming through. Mm-hmm. So it took them until August 15th or so for the first kids from Palestine to get out. Mm-hmm. And then we started hearing, well, you know, maybe Hadil's not going to come. Maybe you should give up. And I said, no, the family's not going to give up. And we think she's the right family, and we think she's the right kid for the family, and we don't think you're going to find a better kid to represent the Middle East in the United States, so we're not going to release her. We're going to keep on persisting because we think she should be here. We don't think if Hadil is not the right kid to come, there's not a right kid. That's what we felt. And so we kind of put our foot down, and it was wonderful the day that we got the news. She came December 29th, and we were so excited. It was wonderful.
I was excited, too.
Yes. Yeah. Meantime, Thayer had gotten to our house, and he had come off the plane, and it was very exciting. He's a gracious young man. When he came off, I just couldn't help but wondering how much courage it must take. He came alone, like you came alone. These kids came alone to a country that had invaded another Arab country, and you know, there's so much talk mm-hmm. about things. And
in a time when people are...
Yeah.
Well, we'll get into that from the video.
It was difficult. And I just had nothing but admiration for them and just totally astonished at their parents, the courage they had to...
Yeah.
Have
actually,
them here.
We had some problems with our parents, most of the students, my friends and me also. Mm-hmm. They were, at some point, they were okay with it, and they told us okay, but when they thought of it, because it took a while till we get here, maybe
oh, yeah.
4 or 5 months.
Yeah.
And they had too much time to think of mm-hmm. it and mm-hmm. rethink and
worry.
Rethink. Mm-hmm. And they found too much things to worry about. And I had problems with my father and also with my mother. But you know, mothers, they're kind of easier. So my mother and I tried to convince my father, and I wrote to Margaret and told her, I have some problems with
yes.
my father, and I need help, please.
Yes. Yes.
What were some of his worries? I can guess, but...
Well, just sending me here alone and, you know, I'm going to live with a family that they don't know. Mm-hmm. But yeah. we met my host family in Syria. Cause
oh,
that,
okay.
Visiting Sam's
yeah,
mother.
They were visiting their family, and we accidentally met, so that helped him a lot.
Uh-huh.
After that, he told me they're a very good family, and they were, mm-hmm. and he was okay with that.
That's a big risk for parents to send their children.
Well, and I think part of it is because the American culture that's seen overseas
yeah.
is the you know, the videos and
films
and things like that that show, you know, murders and sex mm-hmm. and all that sort of thing. And your impression of the United States.
Yeah, that's what I expected when I first came here, to see what I see in the movies,
uh-huh.
you know. And when I went to school, the cliquish things,
uh-huh.
the, you know, groups, and nobody will talk to you because you're from the Middle East. That's what I thought, but it was very great. When I went my first day, I had so many friends. They were very interested of knowing about Palestine. They didn't know a lot, but the good thing, they are interested
uh-huh.
to know
uh-huh.
about that.
So you didn't feel
good.
That sense that you know, people?
No. They're really nice, and it's very different than what we see on TV.
Mm-hmm. Now, the goal of the program, this is a program that's funded by the State Department, and the goal of the program is to promote a cultural dialogue, and not only for Americans to find out more about Islam and about, because
mm-hmm.
Not all of them, but most of the kids are Muslim, for them to find out more about the religion and the culture of the Middle East, but also for them to come and learn about democracy. So we spend a lot of time doing trips. We go to the state capitol, we went to the federal building here, we saw the district courts, we saw the bail bondsmen, we saw the marshals service, we went to the state capitol recently. The kids will be going to Washington, D.C. They'll be meeting with various legislators,
mm-hmm.
really learning a lot. And
if we did mention it before, this is a state...
State Department has funded it. And they're very much behind it. The kids have to do volunteer work. They have a mentor that teaches them about leadership. They have to write essays every month about what they're learning.
Mm-hmm.
After their trips, they write little essays. It's a lot of work for the kids.
Mm-hmm. Presentations.
But that was my thing, because I feel like, and the one question we didn't answer, I have to tell you that, in looking at diversity and looking at our freedoms and that sort of thing, the one question the kids had that I could not answer, and I don't think we've answered it satisfactorily, although this might help, is if you have a free press, if you have freedom of speech, why is it when you pick up the newspapers they carry the same stories and the same viewpoint? Why is it when you turn on the television, whether it's ABC, CBS, CNN, or any of those, Arabs are always terrorists, and
you know, there's always this spin on things. Why is it so similar from one part to the other? Mm-hmm. And that was what we haven't been able to answer, and we asked everybody, why do you think we found this, and do you disagree? Most people didn't disagree, but couldn't quite tell us exactly why that was either. And, you know, that was one of the things they said. If you have so much freedom here, why isn't there better coverage of all aspects of things? Why isn't there a real dialogue on issues?
I imagine it helped them to question, what is a democracy? What do we say a democracy is, and what do we have as an actual democracy in our country?
Well, at a time when we don't even know what a democracy is anymore, frankly, when you look at the Patriots Act, that's pretty controversial. Mm-hmm. You look at, we're redefining a lot of our own standards and our own values, you know, in practice, if not, you know.
Well, I remember there saying, even after he'd been quoted in the press, after our little peace festival, he said, that's not what I said.
Yeah,
it's not what I said. And I think most of us who deal with the press often get interviewed, and we say, that's not exactly what I had in mind.
Well, they were very concerned because of some things going on in Iraq, so they asked him a question about Iraq when he was presenting cultural information about the Middle East and Islam and some information about Palestine as well, and the quote concerned Iraq, mm-hmm. which he knows about what
We want to get into more of the effect of the war and so on at the end, but we'd like to do a little bit more cultural. We have a 7-minute clip that shows the other two students who are part of the local group, but weren't able to be here tonight. And so we'd like to clip off Adil's mic during that presentation, so if someone will turn that off. And it's clip one. This takes place in Gary Chico's home. Gary is a teacher and a librarian, not a librarian, but a, what's Gary's title? I'm blanking. He works with media at Kent, Kentwood, and works with the Cultural Diversity Group. And so there's several teachers in here, in this little, and it's a mixed group of people who are concerned about these issues and about diversity in our schools.
Diversity as a negative, but it's a celebration. I think in early 90s, when we have the racial problem in Kentwood, it took a leader to make the change. And the school did not say it just on a piece of paper and talk to the people about it and they forgot it. They really taught the staff about diversity. Now people look at it as a celebration. I think that is important. As much as we do not have tolerance about diversity in the country, but I think in Kentwood, we celebrate diversity. And I hope that will become a model for what the state will become. And I'm sure sooner or later, that's what will happen if the things go right with our administration.
It took people like Gary, it took people like Mark Mitchell with all these clubs, it took teachers who fostered
that. That would be a very difficult thing to do. You have the support which allow the Gary and other to really flower because they have the support of others.
Well, Gary, what kind of support did you get from the administration?
I think both of you are saying important things, and they're both factual, and there's truth to what you're both saying. We've had good leadership, we've had good professional development, but there's also been a core. Jay Evelyn is a wonderful, phenomenal woman.
That's correct.
We've had other people that are worked in the ESL program that are just spearheads. We have individual teachers, but again, there's the mystery that you are the mosaic, the kind of harmony in your classroom is probably something that's not spoke of and it's not written in a book, but it's the power of having these young people together. Because sooner or later, you know, as they work together on teams in their classes, learning about another culture, another language, you know, they have to share. They depend
group
on
group activities, yeah.
You know, and we have options at Kentwood, which is nice. And that's what I was trying to say before. I think some people don't necessarily agree that we have an Asian American club, we have a Bosnian group, we have the International Club, we have the Star group. And we've given everyone a chance to basically formulate in their own social way, in their own social terms, and express themselves. But we've also given them plenty of opportunity to come together. But nobody's forced the issue. Mm-hmm. No one's saying you have to come together. If you choose to come together, and I think, you know, when you listen to young people and they really express themselves, the kids, the young people are ahead of their parents. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got a lot of people that come to this country.
Definitely.
We've seen it repeatedly, and it's very dramatic in a lot of the students we've had from Islamic countries. Because I know when we try to tour and that, it's always interesting when you're talking or relating or communicating with a family with children that are Muslim. The standards are so different for the boys and the girls. We can do things with the young men. We can travel, we can stay overnight. But when it comes to the girls, you know, there's a whole different set of rules and regulations and criteria. Well, last year I tried to take some girls from India and Pakistan and a couple other countries to Chicago overnight, and when it finally came down to the time to pack your bags and go, we had the boys, but the girls, but it was funny, the girls were going to Chicago with their family, but they couldn't go with us. Because they might be in a hotel and they might be with boys, and we tried to say, well, the boys are going to be in one room and the girls are going to be in another room.
I think we have to respect that. To me, we go back to this. It is the root. We're not changing. It is not cosmetic. It is you looking at the root. And for me to allow my sister or my daughter to be going, I'm changing the roots. And it is hard to change the roots because that's what you believe in. But I look what you said earlier. I believe what we look back and you see the generation coming to Kentwood every year, it is easier for tolerance, for celebrating diversity. Mm-hmm. And back, that's because education. That's because the classes. As a matter of fact, at 7 o'clock today, we have a meeting of the administration for the Diversity Culture Club, I believe, with Teresa DeLong.
Well, the Diversity Council.
That's correct. And they do. I think in Kentwood, I think it is going to be the model for the rest of the school. I associate with other schools, and it is a matter of it is a black and white. That's the only thing they talk about, is the black and white issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have the opportunity to look at data in the school other people might not have. We are truly a salad. You know, some people say it is a melting pot. I don't want to be a part of a melting pot because in the end it's going to be one and it's not going to be unique. I want to be like a chef salad where the tomato and the carrot and the cheese and the salad and the cucumber, that's what make it beautiful. And I want to celebrate my ethnicity just like you want to celebrate being in Tunisia or Syria or Israel or wherever they're coming from. And that's what makes this country great and what makes Kentwood great. And I think we're not there yet, and there is a lot yet to really work on, especially after 2 years ago when we have the 9/11. I mean, did we fear for our life? Yeah, we did. Every Middle Eastern, doesn't matter what their faith is, even a Christian, because they look Middle Eastern, they start getting scared. But what happened is your people who you work with, that's when they open the door for you and say, hey, make sure if something happens, I want to be there because nobody messed with you. Yeah. And I think that's, to me, that we are reaching a point where we start teaching other people about our culture. And for the young kids who's coming into the state, they have to remember, they're not representing themselves. They are ambassador for the country they're coming in. And to represent the rest of the people. So if Thayer does something wrong, guess what? It's not Thayer who did wrong. It is everybody from Gaza or the Palestinians or the Muslim. And that's why we have to be so careful, so sensitive for everything these kids do.
Pressure.
But that's good. They are 18, 17.
Thank you.
There's a lot more in that, but one of the things we wanted to talk about, these are people in our community, and if you didn't pick up, he was saying how when September 11th, how his coworker said, "We want you to know if somebody bothers you." Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the part we don't always hear, that there are people here who are saying, "We know you. You are not, you know, someone far away that is a stereotype at all. You are a real person, and we want you to know we're with you." And so I think the beautiful statement that these folks from Kentwood were making about diversity, the tossed salad. And Hadil has changed during that time and is going to talk a little bit about the culture and some of the dresses. Mm-hmm. We do have call-ins. So if people want to call, I know people are fascinated about who wears what and how and what does that mean. Can you address that a little bit?
Okay. Muslims, women Muslims, should wear this scarf that we call hijab. And it doesn't mean that we're fundamentalists. It's just a faith. Our Islamic faith tells us that we should wear hijab and cover our body. Why? Because we don't want that appearance will affect our faith. That's just why we wear it.
And hijab means and modest dress.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's not a...
It's not a uniform mm-hmm. or a burqa.
Yeah, exactly. We don't have hardly anybody wearing burqa. And
well, what is burqa?
Palestine. Burqa is like the Afghanistani people who wear the whole uniform from, and they will cover their faces, everything in their body. We don't have that thing. We just have to wear long sleeves and a hijab that will cover our hair. That's what we should wear. But there are some people who wear that and some people who doesn't. It just, it's
preference.
Exactly, it's preference. Just a preference.
I didn't get the word.
Yeah. So, like, I don't wear it, and I have friends who wear that, but still, you know, it's up to me. If I wanted to wear it, if I'm ready to wear it, I would wear it. And my mom wears it. If we shot my family picture, mm-hmm. my mom's wears it, and they don't force me to wear it, or they will never do it, because they told me if I'm ready to do it, if I believe that I'm very ready to do it, and I have the complete faith that I am able to do it. I should do it. Here is my mom and my two brothers, my father and me. Mm-hmm. And my mom is putting this scarf on. And I don't think it's a big problem. She still wears anything she wants. But
I've known a lot of people who've worn the hijab and... You know, I've known people who've worn the complete dark, mm-hmm. long cape type of thing, and they're just as nice and friendly and westernized underneath there. I mean, they wear jeans underneath there, or
yeah.
sometimes Christian Dior, or things like that. They're
yeah.
very modern people. It's just an expression, just there.
Yeah, about wearing and clothes. Most of the people here ask me, what do we wear mm-hmm. in the Middle East? Mm-hmm. And we usually wear what you wear here, jeans and mm-hmm. t-shirts mm-hmm. and shirts and everything you have here, we have similar. But we have a traditional dress that mm-hmm. our old people are, you know, it's an ancient thing, it's traditional.
Stand up.
And I hope I won't hurt the mic. And this is our traditional dress. It's hand-stitched. And with this traditional necklace, it is made of coins, old coins, if you can see it. And that's our traditional dress.
That beautiful. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. We don't usually see people walking around the streets with this dress, just maybe in the villages or mm-hmm. in the are really old people.
Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you ever have celebrations or anything where people would dress in a traditional dress? Or
yeah, now traditional dress are becoming fashion.
Oh, okay.
There, because mm-hmm. they're so rare and expensive to find.
Oh, yeah.
So when you go to a wedding or something you want to dress up for, you'll wear this traditional dress.
So is that kind of bringing back a culture?
Yeah.
Maybe it's a just point of pride.
Proud. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Pride. It's showing your pride in your culture at a time when you're sort of under assault.
Yeah.
And maybe the beauty, it's very beautiful.
Thanks.
And this is all handmade.
Yeah.
Lots of hours of work. Mm-hmm.
And each village has different kind of stitch. Mm-hmm. So some villages will have white and red, some will have black and white, and different kind, maybe here the stitches and the edges without stitches, and sometimes they will have something to put on the head. It's really beautiful. And
yeah, it's very beautiful. It's so interesting how different cultures, like the Guatemalan culture, has mm-hmm. a lot of those bright colors, mm-hmm. and villages have their own design. And mm-hmm. it's so interesting, different places from around the world that have similarities. You know, of course, one of the things is the appreciation of different cultures and mm-hmm. the uniqueness of everyone. And I know that's a big part of bringing people together from different cultures. Were there other things that you were able to share with people here and gain from people?
Oh, yeah. I would like to talk about the questions they asked me here. They asked me many questions that they didn't know about, the stereotypes and, you know, the Arabs. They were connected with camels.
Yes, and they always the camel?
We have a cute picture. Can you put that on, Bobby, of when the students went up to, what's it?
Sleeping Bear.
Sleeping Bear.
Sleeping Bear Dunes, and it was a big pile of sand.
They always ask me if we go to school riding camels.
Yes, so this is our picture called Where's the Camel? We have the young man with his arms in the air. That's Ashkin. He's from Azerbaijan. Behind him in the sort of pinkish shirt and jeans, we have Mohammed. He's from Yemen. The girl next to him is Rahaf. She's from Syria. And the young man just in front of her is Thaer. He's from Gaza, Palestine. What can I say? It was a rather large pile of sand that they saw up there, and they were very impressed.
And
we did not find a camel.
The wonderful ability of being able to laugh at the idiosyncrasies of our society.
We did not find a camel despite the fact that it was a sand dune. But the question I get asked a lot of times when I tell people that we have a young man from Gaza in our house, and they say, aren't you afraid? Mm-hmm. I go, whoa! Mm-hmm. He didn't take a gun to Columbine, you know. I mean, he's a wonderful kid. Mm-hmm. He's very kind, very thoughtful.
Well, and I remember you saying...
And appreciative.
Some of the differences, it's so much easier because of some of his background as far as his... You were mentioning about you don't worry about him staying out late. You don't worry about some of these things that...
No, none of the kids that we've had in the program have had any problems, say, with drinking, smoking, partying, you know, sexual experimentation or any of that sort of thing. They've really been very well behaved, and that's probably the one thing that mm-hmm. the Arab community here always says, did you remind people about our crime rate? It's got to be the lowest in the nation. And I think it probably is. I'm not sure, but that's something we'll have to look up, because the idea of Islam is submission to God's will, to God's ways, and they take mm-hmm. it very seriously and try to apply it. I mean, not everybody, of course, but most of them take it very seriously and try to apply it, try to live their faith.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's also part of our culture, because even the Christians, the Arab Christians, we have some values in our culture that we don't give up. It just, we grow up in those values, and our grandparents grew up in those values, so we don't just give up the values. We just take on it wherever we are, and we follow certain values wherever we are, and we just don't go and do whatever we want, because we still remember we have those values.
Community ties.
Yeah.
And obligations.
Yeah.
The one thing is the music. You want to, and I want to remind people, this is a call-in,
And this is a good time to ask about some of those stereotypes you may have from people who, I mean, this is one person. We want to make that clear. This is one person, not everyone. And there's a lot of difference in all of us here and all of us in Palestine as well. But to ask about the culture. And also, she brought along some music. Do you want to explain a little bit about that? Maybe someone could turn it on afterwards.
We have some music, Islamic music. It talks about God, and God is the greatest, and it has some musical instruments, Arabic musical instruments, if you can recognize it. It's kind of drums, but it's a special kind of drum.
Sing together, everyone, la ilaha illallah wa lillah.
And I found this song is interesting because it's this kind in English, and this was the first time that I hear this kind of songs in English, so I like to bring it.
Allahu Akbar wa lillahi alhamd. Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, la ilaha illallah.
Now, when we were together, he was going to try to get some of his hip-hop rap music, which he really likes, but unfortunately, the computer got a worm, and we weren't able to get that tonight. So, like anything else, there's a diversity between the folks here and between the kind of music.
I have to say, the internet has been a connection for the kids before they came, while they've been here, and it will be a connection after they go back as well. All of the kids are very computer literate and spend a lot of time in their countries on the internet making connections with people in their countries and around the world. The other thing I wanted to say, when we talked about Allah, the one question that Thayer has gotten a lot, there are people who don't understand that Allah means God.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the definition. I mean, that's their way of saying God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that they believe that they are, with Christianity and Judaism, from the same
God.
The same God, the same progenitor, Abraham. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's something that he was kind of surprised that people had some misconception about it.
And also, to become a Muslim, you should have the faith in three religions, Judaism and Christianity and Islam. If you just believed in Islam and you said, no, those are wrong, Islam is the perfect thing, you won't be a perfect Muslim. You won't be a Muslim at all. This is one of the rules that you should follow to become a Muslim, to have the faith in those three religions. And people, when I told that to them, they were really amazed because they didn't know that. They thought that Muslims hated Christians or hated Judaism. And people also are surprised because I'm Palestinian and I'm a Muslim. And I also have Jewish friends here and there also, some. There.
Isn't your school a Christian school?
Yeah, and even I go to a Christian school in Palestine.
And Gaza, there's a Christian private school as well.
Yeah.
We do have a call coming in. Corrine is on the phone. Hello, Corrine. Welcome. Do you have a question?
Hi. I was wondering if you're going to get a chance to talk about the whole church situation in Grand Rapids. Do you have a Muslim center here in Grand Rapids that you can participate in? And, you know, are there many people that are attending? What's the size of the group in Grand Rapids and so on? And thank you so much for the program. It's beautiful.
Thank you, Corrine. Hadil, can you speak to that? Have you been able to attend the mosque and
here?
Or you've been here, or what the community is like in the local community?
There is a big Muslim community in
7,000, I think.
Yeah, in Grand Rapids, and they have a mosque here, an Islamic center, two mosques, and they're thinking of building a new one, and they have so many facilities there. They have Arabic lessons. They have Islamic lessons, and I'm trying to volunteer there and teach the kids Arabic and about Islam. And my host mom, she did a lot of presentation about Islam there, and she used to teach there. And a lot of kids go there, especially on Sunday. My host father goes to the mosque every Friday because we have a special prayer on Friday that all the men and the women, they will go to the mosque and pray all together. This is our prayer of Friday. That explains why our holiday is on Friday, not on Saturday or Sunday. So it's really a good mosque here, and the Arab community and the Muslim community are doing a great job by teaching Islam to their kids and learning about the American culture and teaching other people about Islam. And they're presenting Islam in a good way here.
If local schools or interested people would want to learn more about Islam, how might they go about doing that?
We have materials that were donated by the State Department to East Kentwood High School, and the whole school system there, and also to Forest Hills Central, Traverse City High Schools also have the copies. They have books, they have two videotapes, they have an Arabic language program. It's a computer disk that is the one the State Department uses, and the Peace Corps uses, and all of that for their diplomats who are heading over to the Middle East. So that's one source. But I would also like to say that some students have actually visited the mosque, and during Ramadan last year, my husband and I went several times to the mosque for iftar, which is the fast breaking, and attended. They were very gracious and welcomed us. I know they do some tours, and there are also some other sources of Middle Eastern knowledge, so to speak, in the stores. There's, for instance, Mediterranean Island. There's the Eastern Market near Burton and Eastern, where they have Arabic foods, they have cookware, they have tapes, music, phone cards, everything. They just have a pretty good resource here.
Yeah, and also internet is a good resource for knowing about Islam. And
one site is IslamCity.com, and that's an interactive site where people can go to and learn a little bit.
Do you want to say that slower? IslamCity.com?
IslamCity.com, all one word, IslamCity. And moon sighting is one if you're interested in Ramadan or the holidays and things like that. So.
Well, we've talked some about the program, some about the culture, and of course one of the issues... Oops, are we getting a call in? Oh, okay. We might get interrupted. But of course, right now is a real troubling time for all of us around the world with what's happening in Palestine. What would you want the world to know? What would you like people in Grand Rapids to know about the situation in Palestine, what we can do about it, how we can listen, how we can deal with some of the stereotypes and ask questions that get to the root rather than making assumptions?
Well, I want people to know that the Palestinians are suffering too, because when I came here, they asked me, what do you feel about the Israelis suffering from the suicide bombings and all that stuff? They had no idea about how we are suffering, the Palestinians are suffering. They didn't know about the bombings that they are going on. They didn't know about the shootings, about the checkpoints that we have to pass to go and visit our relatives. For example, my father lives in Gaza and I live in Ramallah, and it's like 1 hour away. And before
if you could get through.
Yeah. Before the war started, we used to go every weekend and visit him, and it just took us 1 hour. And now we can't go and visit him, and we just see him in Jordan in the summers. And I'm really scared now because I don't think anybody can go out of Gaza after the...
No, they won't.
Things are happening
recently. They can't get out through it. Yeah, it's closed.
It's closed completely.
I'm sorry, Thier couldn't make it tonight, but I remember you sharing about the trauma of just him getting out of the car quickly before the car stopped, or
some
of the things that...
Thier lives right at the Eretz checkpoint, and there's been a lot of bombings, and they live with tanks and bulldozers and Israeli soldiers outside all the time. Recently, his mother's school, school of 2,000 girls, was occupied. Obviously, the girls weren't there. But it was occupied by soldiers, and his family had a tank about 500 feet from the family's door. It's very difficult. The kids, I think when we went, I took the kids to see Rachel Corrie's mom and dad, and to see an Israeli-led, actually, it's a peace movement that is really doing a wonderful job. They have people in Michigan, a Michigan peace team that go over to Palestine, and Rachel Corrie was a part of that same group that she was the girl that got run over by a bulldozer, and there were some live videos actually of her death, as well as just of the destruction, the bulldozers tearing things down, and just hearing the constant noise of these tanks mm-hmm. and the bulldozers and the shaking ground. It was like there was an earthquake when they were mm-hmm. around, and knowing that there's sporadic gunfire through the nights for anybody that's near a soldier's position, whether it's the wall or a checkpoint or whatever, they spray automatic weapon fire periodically throughout the night. Knowing that when the kids see a helicopter coming over, they're going to be afraid because they have the memories of seeing a helicopter mm-hmm. over there is a death threat.
Yeah.
You know, you have to find cover. So.
Yeah.
It was really startling to see the anxiety that things... I mean, we think of a caterpillar bulldozer as something that's constructive, and I can guarantee you that it's a weapon of death in Palestine
yeah.
and destruction. So
those things happens a lot there.
Yeah.
And even recently in my school there, I was here, fortunately.
Yes.
They invaded Ramallah, and they made a curfew. And everybody was in their schools, and they didn't know about that. So they closed the street of my school, and they start shooting and bombing for the school, and the kids were at school. And there's kindergartners, through the seniors. Mm-hmm. That's how schools are there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And everybody, even you know, they're 16, but still they're afraid. The teachers were afraid. I saw them on the news, the Arabic channel news, and I saw my teachers running, and they were running in the street. My brother had to walk home because nobody is allowed to drive then, and he had he sniffed tear gas. They throw tear gas, and they were shooting rubber bullets. Mm-hmm. And one of his friends got shot of rubber bullets, but he got shot in his leg with rubber bullets, but he wanted to go home, so he walked all the way mm-hmm. through his home with the
bullets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that thing happens a lot of times there, and even the 5 years old kids, even the 2 years old kids are aware of that situation, and they know a lot of that, about that. They know when to be afraid and when not.
So I think the thing that's hard is that, and this is what surprises me, the Apache helicopters are U.S. made, the Caterpillars are U.S. made. Mm-hmm. Last year mm-hmm. we sent $13 billion to Israel, most of which will be used to build the wall, and I think there's about a couple of million is for direct support of the army,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
things like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's kind of sad. It's sad to see that this ongoing assault is something that we support, and yet Thier and Hadil and other kids from the Middle East don't seem to blame the people of the United
mm-hmm.
States.
Mm-hmm.
Thier has never expressed anger toward me about that, or toward my husband or my kids or anybody at school. He's, you know, he feels that the people of the United States are really good people.
Yeah.
He likes so much about our country, the freedoms that we have, the Bill of Rights, the separation of powers, things like that that are supposed to work to help us maintain our system of government.
The one thing, I want to ask you this as well, the one thing I asked there, what would he like the people of the U.S. to do? And he said, stop support for Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you just said, that's a follow-up because of the amount of money and
well,
stuff
what was it? Condoleezza Rice made some sort of wimpish statement about the destruction of 1,000 homes and the death of, 30 children or 40 children this week? It's been a tremendous loss to see the people. Yeah. And always there's some weak excuse. For instance, when we met Rachel Corrie's mom and dad, they're still fighting over a year later to try to get her death investigated because the bulldozer backed up. They have it on tape and ran over her more than once.
Mm-hmm. We only have a couple minutes left. Adele, is there a message you would like to give to the people in this community about what we could do to help this really horrible situation? I mean, I don't know a word strong enough.
I just want the people to know about it, to be aware about it, that people are suffering in that country, and to educate themselves a little bit about what's happening in the world. Because there's Palestine, there's Iraq, there's so many other countries who are in the same situation. Mm-hmm. So I would like people to know about my country when I come here and tell them that I'm from Palestine. I was hoping that they will know where is Palestine. They knew that there is Israel, but they didn't know that there's Palestine, and that hurts me a lot.
At the post office, they said
I'm going to cut you off because the last minute, I would like to put on the number. One way you can help say yes and help tear down this wall is to have an exchange student in your home. And
that's
we
true.
Need, how many more, Margaret, do you need?
We have 4 right now. We're looking for homes for 4 more students in this area.
And you can call Margaret.
16 years
her,
old.
Her number is on the screen.
Yep.
4.
They are
55. I can't read it.
455-8141.
8141.
A terrific kids. Really, really great from good families.
It's for a school year. 455-8141.
Kids have
Margaret,
a scholarship.
Right here. They have to be school age, seniors.
Yep.
Or that's the students coming over.
Yes, most of them will be juniors or seniors.
Juniors or seniors. And you can have them in your home. It's a good opportunity to just share your life with someone else and at the same time help break down the walls.